You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable. ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable. Wrestling is awesome. If you buy a chair and bone on the ropes, rallying up the ladder. Stop the damn facts. 1, 2, 3. ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable. ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable. ESO. Oh, hell yeah.
Hey, folks. Time for the ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable. As always, I'm joined at the table by my stalwart companions, Richard Ewell and Jonathan Williams from WrestlingWithPopCulture.com, and myself, John Morgan Neal, your host. And as always, we're discussing pro wrestling and all its incarnations. And this week, we are going to be joined by Michael Gordon from the ESO home show, or the main show, and our newcomer, Mark Bosquet. And we also, Jonathan is going to have an interview with indie wrestler Slim J, who helps run the Dragon Con wrestling DCW shows at Dragon Con, which of course is the other big deal. It's coming up in Atlanta. It's the biggest, one of the biggest shows of the year of the pop culture and comics and all the set and the other. And of course, actually, Michael Gordon and the ASO gang will be set up there as well. And we're going to be talking SummerSlam and all of the aftermath after that, as some big things have happened this last week and the last couple of weeks in wrestling. And we will also get an update on who won the predictions. So sit back and give a listen.
We need to tape a promo, guys. If you had to encapsulate the roundtable in one catchphrasey kind of way, what would you say?
Rampant Glickery? Redonkulous? let's not go with Shrink. That you know. The first one was good. The second one was great. After that, it kind of, you know.
Guys, promo. Stay on topic here. Okay. Stay on topic.
Stay on topic. Oh, no, I'm going in.
Stay on topic. Stay on topic.
Topic.
Red leader, no, I'm sorry.
Stay on topic.
I can't say it. It's up to you, Red 5.
Oh, God.
Where's the promo,
so,
Luke?
Promo. The round table. Brought to you by Revolution SF. Tough love for sci-fi. Available at RevolutionSF.com and iTunes.
Hello, we're ESO Pro, and we're back, and we're going to have a little conversation with indie pro wrestler and promoter of the Dragon Con Wrestling, Mr. Slim J.
What's up?
Jonathan Williams is going to lead this conversation. So, Jonathan, start up.
Well, correct. Dragon Con Wrestling is coming up. Well, Dragon Con in general is coming up, but Dragon Con Wrestling is September 1st, and Slim J is very involved with that. But before we get into that, I think our listeners deserve a little background on Slim J and how'd you get into wrestling and where all have you wrestled. I know you've done some work for some of the bigger companies, but you're very well known throughout Georgia and the Southeast, and you've been doing it for a number of years and worked with some of the greats. So just let everybody know where you started and who trained you and how you got into everything in wrestling.
Okay. I actually started, my sister worked at a place called Elliott Wave International, and I didn't really know anything about independent wrestling, and AJ Styles was the water boy for that company. And he delivered water, and he always talked about wrestling. And my sister said, my brother loves wrestling. What do you do it at? And as soon as she told me where it was at, I was up there that Tuesday and trained with him for probably 3 months before he started getting really big, you know, traveling around. And Rick Michaels, his trainer, stepped in and started teaching, and I finished training there, and that was back in 2000. I began it October 12th of 2000. My first match was April 1st, 2001, on a Friday night, and Bill Behrens is the man who came up with the name Slim J and the whole character, and been here ever since. I just love it, man. I've been different places. I was the youngest person to ever be on international pay-per-view for NWA TNA at the time when they first started their ninth pay-per-view. I did a lot of traveling with Ring of Honor from 2002 until 2004 and numerous places. Last year I was at Ring of Honor, and next month I'll actually be there too. So here, when they're in Duluth and Atlanta, so still sticking with it, trying to make it big, you know?
Yeah. So that promotion, what was that promotion you said where you started?
It was NWA Wildside at the time, which came from NCW.
Right, but
I remember Wildside.
NWA Anarchy, and then Anarchy, and While We Wrestle, what the building is today. Same building.
What was the one you mentioned where you said AJ was the water boy?
That was Elliott Wave International was the place he delivered to. That was where my sister was an accountant.
Oh, so it was not a wrestling promotion or company?
No. My sister was an accountant working in her job.
And he was delivering water, right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gotcha, okay. So you started out at NWA Wildside in Cornelia, which we've talked about that promotion on the show a few times because, of course, AJ Styles got his start there and numerous other people, Abyss. Who else got started there that people would know?
You've got Xavier Woods. You've got what's he go by in the WWE now? R-Truth.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Fandango's wrestled there. Heath Slater. The list goes on and on. I mean, the Hardy Boys wrestled there when it was NCW.
Mm-hmm. So you've been training up there. Are you still a trainer now that it's Why We Wrestle?
Yes, me and Azrael actually team up to do the training. He does Tuesday nights and I do Thursday nights.
And how long have you been training people up there?
From about 2007.
Wow. And so when did you get involved with Dragon Con Wrestling? Because it's always been not strictly in Wildside or Anarchy show, but it definitely features a lot of the talent from up there, probably partially because of your involvement with it.
Well, I actually ran into a guy named AJ and another guy who used to go by the name of Tiny. He actually passed away. But they are the ones who got us involved with Dragon Con, and that was back in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
We started working for him in North Carolina at just random shows. And then he said he did this one big show every year called Dragon Con. And I had no clue what Dragon Con was. He told us the address. When I got there, I called him to make sure this was the right place because all the atmosphere, the wild outfits and girls wearing nothing. I was like, just making sure this was the place. And I've just been there ever since, kind of became really good friends with them and just help them out with the booking and keep good talent on their roster.
Right. So you are mainly the booker for the show?
Me and AJ, yes, sir.
Okay. And you also are one of the wrestlers still.
I am.
We talked to CB Suave last week and he talked about the atmosphere, and you talked about it just now a little bit, but for people who've never been to Dragon Con, or specifically Dragon Con Wrestling, how does it compare to other indie wrestling that you've been involved with?
It's just a totally different crowd, to be honest. There's a lot of drunk people, of course, partying. They always party down there at that time of the year. But, I mean, you've got a lot of people that just come to that show just to get into it that don't drink or do drugs or anything. So it's every type of person you can really think of combined into one room. I wouldn't recommend kids and stuff coming to this event, but I've seen a few there. The crowd is so much different than other places due to the outfits, the personalities that's in the crowd. It's hard to explain, man. It really is, because you just have to be there to experience it. And if you haven't been there, you can always go on YouTube and type in Dragon Con professional wrestling or anything like that, and you'll find a couple of videos, and you'll see what I mean with that crowd. They get really wild.
Yeah, I remember Lucky Charms were a big part of it for many years, and they got banned.
It's banned. We had to get that banned, though. Lucky Charms are banned now.
Do you even
no
know
more.
How that even started? How did Lucky Charms become a thing that the crowd brought?
I believe it started with midgets. They used to do a midgets match.
Mm-hmm.
And just one of the midgets used it as his gimmick, I do believe. And he just popularized. He made it mainstream at Dragon Con. Every year they beg for it. But
I bet.
They shut that down because we were starting to ruin their carpet and stuff. So,
so
it's wild things there.
So lay down plastic.
Right. I mean, that was just the cherry on top of some of the things that I can't even speak of that's happened there.
No.
So it's because it has been a Friday night tradition, basically. Dragon Con wrestling is one of the things for many people that kind of kicks off Dragon Con. This year, of course, it's been moved up a day to Thursday, which is almost like an unofficial day, where, from my understanding, you don't even have to have a Dragon Con badge to get into the events on Thursday. Is that the case? Is it, or do you have to have a badge this year?
That is the case. I think it's kind of like a trial run this year. They're trying to move the whole Dragon Con to Thursday, start the whole event, and this is just a trial to see how it works, because we're the only thing going on that day.
Oh, really?
Yes.
There's usually a couple bands, and they'll actually have some panels on Thursday night, but I would imagine if they've got wrestling going on, then people aren't going to be at many of the other events.
I'm hoping that myself, but I think that they're just doing the bands after us and maybe a few panels during. So it's just a trial run. I really can't tell you how it's going to be. It's going to be a surprise for everybody this year.
Yeah. Whose decision was that?
Dragon Con themselves. I don't get to sit in with the meetings to see who gets to make all the decisions, but the people that we have has informed us how we have to book it this year and how it's going to be from now on. So it is confirmed that we are going to be running Thursday from now on.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully that goes well if it's going to be a permanent fixture for Thursdays.
We're hoping that, too.
The good news is most people show up Tuesday and Wednesday. I mean, Dragon Con really is kind of that week. You know, it's not just – people just don't show up for the con. It's all the pre-stuff. I know when I went in 2014, we got there on Wednesday afternoon.
Oh, wow.
So.
Yeah. That's
what they say. A lot of people are telling me right now about that. And I'm not a big Dragon Con person. I don't go check out every event because I'm too concerned with professional wrestling and worried about our event. So I hope that is the case, that a lot of people are there ready to go waiting for wrestling too.
Well, excellent. You know, hopefully, we've already said that. I'm sure it'll go over gangbusters and sounds like it'll be a great time.
Yeah. So, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, we got a lot of good talent this year, just like every year. So I don't see any trouble with that.
Well, you mentioned earlier that Bill Barron's kind of helped you come up with your gimmick. For those who don't know, you're basically a white rapper, but as you can hear from your voice, you're from the South, so you got kind of a Southern white rapper thing. Were you doing that before John Cena, or was it about the same time?
It was actually before. It was when he was in OVW doing the prototype gimmick.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was the first to that one.
And the prototype was a heel, folks.
He was.
Just pointing that out, that John Cena actually was a heel at one point.
Well, even the master of Thuganomics was
a heel. That's true. Yeah, he started out a heel in SmackDown, but yeah.
So, I mean, you say Bill Barons came up with the gimmick, but it seems like it's very much part of who you are, because you've done some, you've recorded some hip hop and stuff like that, right?
Right. I mean, you have to live the character to become it. Regardless, I never thought I would make music, to be honest with you here. But when someone tells you this is what you do, this is what you do. And I lived it. I went and bought the recording stuff, learned how to mix, made some really crappy music, and then started getting really decent at it.
Well, you know, when somebody is dedicated and talented to a particular thing, it usually opens doors to things that they wouldn't have ever imagined, you know, like other wrestlers, like, you know, John Cena recorded a scene, you know, a rap, and you've got one of them going to TV shows and movies and so on and so forth. They did a shoot interview with Stan Hansen, and they asked him about, you know, him being in No Holds Barred, you know, which was a bit unusual because he wasn't a WWE wrestler. So you would think they would have gotten a WWE wrestler to go and be with Hogan in this movie and so on and so forth. And he talked about how it was a different experience, so on and so forth, and that he regrets that he didn't pursue that sort of thing more, you know. So that just goes to show you that there, even Stan Hansen, who would be the last person you would think that would be an actor or be, you know, even interested in doing movies or whatever, regrets the fact he didn't do it more, and he had that opportunity and enjoyed it. So, I mean, it's a good thing that, you know, I'm very, you know, it's a testament to you and your dedication to your character and to the sport of professional wrestling.
Thanks, sir.
I gotta ask, you know, I unfortunately have not got the experience, you know, your thing. But I was just wanting to say, I mean, it seems like it sounds sort of, you know, at least, you know, in my first blush, a little like Enzo. How close are you to Enzo, or Enzo to you?
I'm not that type. I'm more just the rapper kind of serious guy. I've never really been. When I did the heel run for a while, yeah. I was pretty out there, like the kind of Enzo type character, but no, I kind of took my own route and started trying to just take it like serious, like somebody would take Eminem. They wanted me to be an Eminem wannabe, so I took it serious in that aspect. I didn't do the outlandish stuff like he does. So.
Right.
I wanted to be a little different.
Understood.
So Mike Posey, now known as P-Dog, has kind of essentially stolen your gimmick. I know you guys have crossed paths a little bit, but you mentioned you're going to be at the Ring of Honor show. I forget the date right now, but it's in September. I think he's going to be there as well. Are you guys scheduled to compete against each other, or do you know that yet?
I don't know as of right now who I'm wrestling. No, last year we did actually.
Yeah,
he was we did the P-Dog and I wrestled him. So it was a little different.
And one of the other times he wrestled Caprice Coleman, I think it was, and that was really good because Caprice made fun of him quite a bit.
Right. Yeah, Caprice is a lot more character than y'all get to really see.
So it's September 24th at the Infinite Energy Center, and you can go to ROHWrestling.com for tickets. Are you doing any of the other Reloaded tour dates or any other Ring of Honor dates in the near future?
Not that I know of. I mean, of course, if they ask me, I'll be right there.
So you mentioned that you were pretty regularly involved with TNA and then in Ring of Honor. What happened when you had those two runs? Why did they come to an end, and why haven't you had those opportunities again.
Well, to be honest, I'm not going to give you every bit of the details, but I was young and I was dumb and doing stupid things, making stupid choices and thinking I deserved things that I was nowhere near deserving of at the time. And Ring of Honor was my real run. I got to run with them for a few years. TNA, I only did one pay-per-view for them, and still to this day, it's because I know I grabbed the hell out of my crotch. That was my character. And I went overboard that day. I was too amped up. Way too amped up. So it looked more like a young man out there fondling himself instead of in the character. So I got in trouble for that one. I'll give you the info on that. But Ring of Honor, I was just young and dumb. Now I'm a grown man and trying to get back to the opportunities I had when I didn't know that I had them, to be honest with you. I was just too arrogant, too dumb. Now I'm wise and know exactly what I can do with those opportunities, and I just have to get them and present myself the way I know I can.
Well, that's certainly the positive way of looking at it, and hopefully those opportunities do come back, and this time you can utilize them better.
Yes, sir.
I remember seeing you, you got a dark match, I think, at a TNA, I guess it was a TNA house show, probably about 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago in Gainesville, Georgia. That was after, I'm guessing, that was several years after you did the pay-per-view for them, right?
Yes, sir.
So did you get any feedback or anything after that match?
I got a lot of positive stuff. I just never got a call back. I did the tryout with them. They had the whole tryout deal throughout the day, and we got to showcase a match, me and Patrick Bentley. It's just I haven't got the opportunity to really stay there and do more things, and hopefully next month I get to prove that I'm worthy enough to stay there
for Ring of Honor, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. So where else do you wrestle regularly these days? I think you you're still doing Peach State, I think, right, out in Carrollton?
Yeah, I did Peach State. I do PCW.
I saw you there not long ago when you wrestled Jeter, and there was a third guy in the match, too.
Yeah, I wrestled there. I wrestle while we wrestle, the NWA Anarchy, the same building. And I do Southern Fried. I got Southern Fried Championship coming up next month. Anywhere that'll have me, to be honest with you.
Well, those are some of the bigger ones in Georgia, so you seem to be on the right track there.
I'm just trying to get back on that road I was on years and years ago. I'm trying to be smart about it this time.
Right. Cool. Well, do you have any social media pages you want to promote or anything else like that where people can find you online or get in touch with you?
And get booking?
They can always find me on Instagram, Twitter as Tadpole Slim J. And then you got me on Facebook, Tadpole Slim J Lick'em.
I love that.
And y'all always can see me on YouTube. All you got to do is Slim J Wrestling, and I got tons of videos there that people's uploaded, and I've uploaded myself. If you ever want to check me out,
I'll do it.
Well, speaking of YouTube, pretty much all of Anarchy and NWA Wildside and all that is on YouTube, right?
Yes.
I mean, even going back to when AJ was still there and all those people.
Yeah, there was a guy who uploaded every episode. I mean, he has every episode of Wildside. He has every episode of NWA Anarchy.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Until the day we shut down as Anarchy.
Awesome.
So, yeah, you can find everything.
Does Why We Wrestle have anything like that yet?
We have a few things, yes. We're starting to pick it back up right now. We had a little trouble getting started, but, yeah, there's a lot of footage starting to stream out right now. So if you ever want to see that and see what the new product is, Why We Wrestle, check it out on YouTube, everybody.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to Dragon Con and Ring of Honor, and I'm sure I'll see you at some of these other indie shows at some point as well.
Oh, of course. All right. Well, yeah, we got next Friday, next Thursday, man. It breaks down. We got people like Iceberg. We've got Azrael, Logan Creed. We've got Jacoby Boykins, Washington Bullets. We've got Jeter, Brian Blaze, Judas, Seth DeLay, Strychnine, CB Suave. You talked with him. Manchild. We got a ton of people. So if you're free next Thursday, come out.
Where does Manchild come from? Because I only see him at Dragon Con Wrestling.
Last time we spoke, I believe he was staying in North Carolina. So he might work a few shows there.
Okay.
But he's a character. If nobody's ever seen Manchild, type in Manchild Wrestling and it'll blow your mind.
I'm not sure what else you might find if you type up Manchild Wrestling.
Pro Wrestling. Manchild Pro Wrestling. There we go. Got to get the tag right. Yeah, there's no telling. Don't Google it. Definitely.
All right. Well, I appreciate you talking to us. If you guys have any other questions, go for it.
No, I think I'm good. Thanks for...
Yeah, it's great. You covered it. Covered it all.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Slim J. We really appreciate it. And I do recommend Dragon Con Wrestling. Even if you're not a wrestling fan, it is something to see. And to see fans as passionate as the ones that are at DCW, it's really cool.
Definitely. Well, thank y'all so much for having me, and y'all have a great night.
All right, you too.
You too.
Welcome to Name That Wrestler, the game show where our contestants have to name that wrestler with just 3 one-word hints that are deemed capable of guessing the wrestler correctly by the commissioner. You all work as a group to come up with the answer, and you get one and only one answer. So the question is, can you all name that wrestler? Welcome to another edition of Name That Wrestler. This week we've got a full crew for the game show. We've got John, Jonathan,
hi,
Mark, and Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
Thank you, gentlemen. And the first Name That Wrestler question is, the 3 one-word hints are window, hoodie, and barber.
Shawn Michaels. Or Marty Jannetty.
I didn't know if we needed to discuss first.
Oh, I'm sorry.
John takes over. The second one is correct.
I'm sorry. I jumped on that because I'm a big rock.
So the hoodie came from when he came back.
Right.
When he came back against Shawn Michaels, the guy come through the crowd and he had a hoodie on, and it was Marty Jannetty. All right.
Someday we'll get into the whole, I hate the whole Marty Jannetty tag team analogy thing, but we'll throw that to some other day.
Some other day. All right. The second one is plumber, plunger, and flush. A little bit trickier.
I know the answer, but I'm going to let somebody step forward to do that.
Work it out.
You know the name right off, John? That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I did.
Well,
does anybody else have a guess?
I'm having the Lenny Lane problem again. I see the guy. I just don't quite.
He had a great feud. Perfectly, didn't he? Yeah, he had a feud with
I can't
Triple
remember
H.
anything he did. I mean, I know him from. Here's a little hint. I know him from Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and he's sort of a legend around my parts.
All right, the clock's ticking. I want to say it.
All right, go ahead.
T.L. Hopper.
Yep. T.L. Hopper, better known as the Dirty White Boy.
The Dirty White Boy, Mark Anthony. Yes.
And I was a big Dirty White Boy fan. Just cause,
I was as well. Yeah. Yes. I was as well.
So, all right.
Hey, he had a great song for his theme song.
Oh, it's going to be played right now.
Yay!
And I will add that in because it is, it's just a bunch of flushes.
Yes.
It's the best. All right. The third, the third, name that wrestler, and final one is Shin, Tool, and Holiday. Any guesses? Anybody know it?
Yeah, I know it.
Shin, Tool, and Holiday.
Yep.
Anybody else know it right
son,
off?
Son of a
no
great
idea.
The second generation wrestler.
All right, go ahead, John.
Greg Valentine.
Yeah, Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Greg the Hammer Valentine. The whole Shin thing with the figure four.
That's all I know him. I mean, like, that was my childhood, was him using the Shin.
Yeah.
And it was airbrushed. He would airbrush, like, broken bones on it and stuff.
Yes, he would. And, of course, Valentine's Day is a holiday. I was a big Greg Valentine fan, even before he got to the WWE or WWF or whatever. And he actually has, he's got some kind of agreement, I guess, working as a manager or whatever. I haven't got to go over there yet, but he's hooked up with NWO Texoma and our local indie wrestling now.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
All right, well, thank you, gentlemen, for participating in our game show, which is purely for good. John's amusement. Got to make the host happy.
ESO Pro is proud to present Finn Balor's theme song, On a Train Whistle.
Hi, welcome back. We got a full round table here on the ESO Pro today. Myself, of course, I'm John, not Billy Corgan, Morgan Neal. Always my right-hand man, the producer of the show, Richard, not Carlito, Caribbean Cool Yule. And our man about town, our roving reporter and third man, the booth, Jonathan, not Dr. Death Williams. And tonight we're joined by the ESO Pro Home Show stalwart partner to my director Mike Favor, our one and only Michael Gordon Soley, not. And finally, our new kid on the block. He's joining us for the very first time, hailing from Nevada. It's Mr. Mark, not David Arquette, Bosquet.
How's it going, guys?
He's very proud of those.
I'll work on them. I just sweat over them.
As he should be.
Yeah, thank you.
Those were good.
Thank you. So, anyway, okay, we are going to talk about SummerSlam and the aftermaths of the big show, the big tentpole show of summer. So, without further ado, we're just going around the table and discuss it. Richard, Mr. Yule, you go first.
You know, I forgave Seth Rollins. I forgave him for taking away Sting from us. You know, we all know it would have been Sting versus Undertaker this year, and whether it would have been a good match or a bad match or whatever, that's something I've been wanting to see all my life, literally. And so I forgave him. You know, mistakes happen. Then he hurt himself, and then now he's hurt Finn Balor. So in less than a year, he has hurt three people, and something has got to be done. And I would like to, two of those injuries involving the running powerbomb, which if nobody remembers, D'Lo Brown used to do that. And D'Lo Brown and Draws were in an incident during the running powerbomb where Draws is paralyzed. And how they're still doing this move and they took the curb stomp away from him, I'll never know. And I just, I think you're just seeing Seth being reckless in many ways. Just being, I mean, he's good, and I think he's a good heel. I know he's a good heel. And, I mean, what he did Monday was perfect for the situation, just the way he reacted, but I just don't know. That move should not be in his repertoire anymore, and they should tell him to calm down. That's my rant number one. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, somebody chime in what they think about it.
Well, I was trying to remember if that was something he did a lot before he was in WWE. I don't think it was. I saw a good bit of his Ring of Honor work. I don't remember.
I don't think it was either, Jonathan, because I was a big, big Ring of Honor Tyler Black fan as well. And so I don't remember. I don't remember it much before Sting, to be honest.
Yeah, and the curb stomp, he never actually hurt anyone with that, right? They were just worried that kids would do it.
Yeah, because I think the curb stomp is actually one of those moves that looks worse than it is. I mean, it's pretty easy on everybody in the ring, but then if kids started doing it, then yes, it would be pretty ugly out there.
Actually, from what I understand, that certainly that's part of it, but I think it's because someone somehow did not understand the connotation of the other, you know, the more common idea about what a curb stomp is. And apparently there was a little bit of worry or backlash about that as well. So it's that whole PC, social media, you know, worry of getting on the wrong side of that type of thing. It's also part of the reason why they got rid of it.
Well, I mean, really, the move is kind of famous from American History X, right? I mean, that's where I know curb stomp from.
Yeah.
Like, that's the first thing that came to mind when they named the move curb stomp was American History X. So that's something they probably don't want to be related to.
That's exactly right, Richard. I forgot about that. That's the real crux of the issue was they didn't want to be associated with that. And none of them, I guess, thought about it or knew of it. You know, and then when it did, and why they just changed the name of the move, I don't know, but that's neither here nor there.
I'm a big Seth Rollins fan as well, and I don't know. I mean, I understand this situation, and certainly if the WWE said, Seth, don't do that again, you know, and I don't think Seth was like, I want to do this and, you know, screw y'all. I'm going to do this despite the fact, because many other guys, I think, have taken it that have not gotten hurt.
Oh, true.
So, so it's just, you know, it's one of those things that certainly the instance where he hurt himself was just a fluke. Wasn't anything. Yeah. That's not, oh my God, he's a danger to everybody. And people also bring into a Bret Hart brings in, you know, the John Cena thing, and John Cena will be the first one to tell you that he's the one who went right into Seth on that when he got his nose busted. So, you know, there's other moves, obviously, that have gotten that are kind of scary out there. I know that the Styles Clash, right? That's hurt some people.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up, too.
And also Samoa Joe's has some moves that are kind of scary, too.
Well, Tyson Kidd may not ever wrestle again because of it.
Yeah, so you know what? I'm hard pressed to like come down really hard on him and say I certainly wouldn't label like Bret has and label Seth an unsafe or a dangerous wrestler. I'm not willing to go that far on it. But you can't, you know, twice. You kind of have to go, well, maybe he shouldn't be doing that particular move now.
Yeah, that's one of those things that you adapt and you overcome. And obviously Rollins isn't trying to hurt anybody, unlike maybe Brock Lesnar, but we won't get into that right now. seriously, though, I mean, I love Bret Hart to death, but I think there's a serious personal thing between him and Rollins that we're not aware of that happened somewhere or something. He apparently just doesn't like the guy because he has been after him for a while now. But here's the deal. I don't think it's a Seth Rollins problem. Go ahead, Richard. Say what you're going to say.
Well, I was just going to say I don't think Bret, the new generation of wrestlers, I think Bret has a problem with in a way. You know, I mean, where Bret came from is just completely different.
Oh, well, wait a minute. We're missing, you know, and to be fair, he did go after Joe, too, when he injured Tyson.
Oh, sure.
But, of course, he's obviously very familiar with Tyson. He was close in South Florida, but... But anyway, I don't think that it is a Seth Rollins problem. I do think it is, and we had a past podcast when we talked about the swathe of injuries from last year, and I just think it's, and it looks like they're kind of moving away from that, but and actually kind of ties into the whole Miz conversation with Daniel, the argument there, and that Miz's style has allowed him not to get injured or injure anyone else, and. You know, of course, a lot of indie fans, and I did see the IDW and so on, look at that as soft and not as good, and so on and so forth. But we've seen that these guys can't hold up. Daniel Bryan is out of wrestling. You know, Tyson Kidd may be out of wrestling. You know, we've seen, you know, now Claudio or Cesaro has got a chronic shoulder problem that may limit his years, you know, as compared to some of the guys that, are, you know, are actually still wrestling, like Taker and Triple H and so on and so forth. So, you know, I think that's something that should be mindful. I do believe that the move should be definitely scrutinized, considered banning. It could certainly even turn into a storyline, you know, to where, you know, make it a kayfabe thing where they're banning it because he's injured, you know, two people with it. So, and that would be a good reason for it to go away without just quietly going away in the night.
And it gives
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think turning it into a story is the way to do it. There's I don't know if you happen to read today, David Shoemaker has an article on the Ringer talking on the Ringer website talking just about this, springing from the Bryan Miz confrontation on SmackDown Live about, you know, this kind of changing of the guard in the WWE, how these indie guys have brought in a more physical style of wrestling and getting into this idea of, you know, length, right? And that when you watch some of these guys, some of the favorite wrestlers now, you kind of watch with bated breath because their injuries feel like, whether it's, I mean, I'd love to see a stat on it, but injuries feel like such a more prevalent role now, or at least the dramatic injuries seem much more real now. It seems like they happen much more often than they did in the past, and you wonder how much of that is style, and then you wonder how much, you know, as much as like, I personally love this kind of infusion of talent. Like, at some point, do they have to kind of pare back a little and well, go I, to I, that, that Miz good, style?
Yeah, you make a good point, Mark. And I think what it is, and we kind of discussed this last time, it's a combination of the style plus the schedule. I mean, a lot of indie wrestlers do certainly do this, and then they've had long careers. Daniel had a very long career up until this point. Of course, it's wear and tear, but he didn't have near the schedule in the indies that he did in WWE. The WWE schedule is just brutal, and that's actually one of the good things about the brand split is that there's that it's going to at least alleviate that to some degree. But anyway, so we'll see what that happens. You know, hopefully there isn't any more injuries from the move, if the move continues on, or certainly maybe even a banning of the move. So let's go to Mr. Mike Gordon, sir. What is on your mind?
Well, just to continue that, though, I will say that, surely the downside, though, is that, I mean, Finn was supposed to be the guy, and now yes. Finn's not the guy, and now they have to scramble, and, you know, I'm not... not sure any of us are really confident of their abilities once they have to scramble and make the best of it. So,
I'm going to talk about that because I know exactly who Vince McMahon is going to bat. I know exactly who's going to bat. So,
obviously, you know. But I will say the biggest impression that SummerSlam made to me overall was just – I just thought that the order of the booking matches was just a mess. Like I just – it just didn't seem – it seemed like their priorities or where they put the belts and where they put the matches and everything just was just thrown together. It didn't really feel organic. It didn't really make the belts feel important. Mm-hmm. It certainly for those people, which is, I know a lot of people, that don't like Roman Reigns, it certainly made it even, they just keep messing up where they're using him. Like if Roman had been his match or whatever, that had been early on in the show, it would have been something that was just like there. But instead there was this big build to it because it was like towards the end. Yep. And I just don't understand that. I don't understand the placement of the women's match and all that. So that to me, because there were some really good moments, but I think the inconsistency of all the matches and just the way it laid out, kind of like after the best match of the night for me was Cena and Styles, and like there was a whole. After that match that they really never came back from.
Yeah,
I don't think anybody would disagree that was the Cena Styles match was definitely the best match, and it was hard for anything to follow.
That'll be Richard's next round there.
Me and John have already done.
And I can't wait. So we're going to, I'm having to wait, but I can't wait to hear. But yes, go ahead, Jonathan.
That was all I was just responding to that. I think everybody agrees that was the best match on the card.
Except for Rick.
To have, six or seven matches after that was kind of weird.
It was bad. Whether Rick agrees with it or not, he does. Obviously, concede the point that the crowd was hotter for that than it was anything else on the card. So, regard alone, it was just really bad that they couldn't really build back up to that.
And even though it wasn't for a belt, just like the Brock Lesnar belt. And I get it. Brock is a big name. So him at the end, I wasn't surprised by that. But Cena's your guy. I mean, he is, quote unquote, the face that runs the place. I mean, and if he's going to have his, quote unquote, I don't want to say, obviously, we all know it's not going to be his last match. But if he's going to have this big match where he walks away, you want that, I think, at the end.
It was a huge symbolic deal.
Stepping away and putting AJ over
like he's never put anybody else over ever.
Yeah, it was definitely a passing the torch kind of thing.
Yes.
Well, and it's the order was such a mess, right? Because, like, I want everything to like build to the next thing, right? And you want the night to like slowly build up, and when you get to the end of the night, like. Brock could have destroyed Randy at any point in the program, and then he was still going to go away for 3 months or 6 months, however long it is. Like, how does that benefit them closing the show, right? A really awkward ending where you're supposed to, like, what, go away thinking that he went off script and that he, like, lost control? Like, it didn't make any sense. They had to know that the Cena-Styles match was going to be the match of the night going in, right? I mean, that seemed to be kind of, you know, if you were going to put money down, that was a big moment. And it should have been – absolutely. Like, if the event had closed with that close-up of, you know, Cena's armband in the ring, right, never give up, fade to black, that leads to, like, a real question about what's going on on Monday night. But, you know, Brock destroying Randy, I mean, it was just kind of like, well, okay. I mean, if anything, I would – and, like, that, too, I mean, it wasn't even a match. It was just another one of these kind of Brock destructions that just...
– I don't know if anybody here agrees with me or not, but I'm bored to death with that now. I'm done. I'm done with the whole thing. Unless they finally pull it off and allow some, you know, younger up-and-coming guy to go over him, like Bray or somebody, and have that all this mean something in the end. I mean, I'm done with that, really.
What is it? Yeah, what does it build to, right? I mean, are you excited about the rematch? You know, like if Randy had won and then Brock had gone away for 3 months, right? And then we had been getting these, you know, vignettes and about, you know, Brock like desperate to come back, desperate to destroy it, then you'd at least build to something. But now it was just kind of like another destruction that doesn't mean anything. And now he goes back to Minnesota for 3 months.
Yeah, that's true. Jonathan, speak up.
About what's
your
part?
Turn?
Oh, well, I've said some stuff already. So.
Oh, have you? Well, no, this is where you have to lead. I mean, each one of us takes a turn leading discussion. So.
Gotcha. Well, I agree. I just thought the order of the matches was very strange. Even if you don't, you know, of course, I knew the Brock match would be the main event. But even aside from that, to have the U.S. title match after the Universal title and World title match, I just didn't get it. I didn't think any of those matches were necessarily bad matches, but again, to follow the Cena Styles match, just, you know, it made it, that was a hard act to follow. And then wasn't the six women tag match right before the Brock Lesnar match?
It was somewhere in there. It was somewhere where it shouldn't have been.
A pre-show at best quality match.
I'm doing my very damnedest to forget the whole thing, Jonathan.
Well, I'm sorry to remind you, but it's just a further example of the order of the matches just didn't make sense. And I've heard or read somebody said maybe the two creative teams just weren't ready to do a co-branded
event. I was speculating that. That's been my speculation.
They've been doing co-branded events. You know, I don't know if they've created.
Is the first co-brand since the split, except for, of course, the Battleground, but that was all, you know, set and planned. These are stuff that was already set and planned as far as matches that were built up and so on and so forth. This is the first co-brand that actually the two separate teams with their own agendas had to sort of work together, and apparently it was a mess, if this is any indication. So I just hope that they're able to do it better, you know, around Royal Rumble time. So,
well, do we know when the next combined one is? Is it going to be Survivor Series or
should be?
I am probably be. Yeah, I would say so.
Because October, September will be SmackDown. October will be Raw, and then I'd say Survivor Series will be the co-branded.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it'll probably be WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, Survivor Series, and SummerSlam. Like it was before when there was a brand split.
So is there another big issue that's pressing upon you, Jonathan Williams, that you need to speak about?
I'm not thinking of anything. The whole thing with The Miz, though, I was surprised he didn't mention the fact that he got a concussion when he was the champion, when the whole Rock Cena thing because he was being accused of never being injured or something like that by Daniel Bryan, and he has been injured, and he not only that, but he, you know, through questionable means, he retained the title even though he got a concussion and continued to be the champion for a little while after that.
And he did.
So, I don't know. I think, like you said, that oddly, the Miz's rant ties in very well with, you know, the controversy with Seth Rollins and the ongoing issues with injuries and whatnot. It's just kind of weird that he's the guy that.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead. I'm sorry, Tom.
It's just weird that the Miz of all people is the guy kind of speaking out on that.
In a way, yeah. In a way, no. Because if you really look at the whole big picture, the Miz is a veteran now. He's been there for a long time, and he's been through, you know, at the top and at the bottom and in the middle. And he's a guy that WWE truly believes in and should believe in because he has been consistent. He has been reliable. He hasn't got injured but the one time, as you mentioned. He's not prone to injuries. You know, he's a great, you know, ambassador at large, even regardless of how many people want to say, you know, and I know the indie wrestlers are a little different about this, but the WWE is a product, and they do more than just the wrestling. And so to be able to have a guy to go out there and work the media like he does is a very, very big asset. And this opens up my position where I'm going to take a moment here, and I'm going to say that I love Daniel Bryan to death. I do. And I love CM Punk to death. I do. I actually, if, you know, I had to pick, I would say they were better, more favorite wrestlers of mine than The Miz, but I also like The Miz, and I have been a fan of The Miz for a long time. He lost his way there a year or so ago, and I lost interest in him, but he's been doing very damn good work, you know, the last year, and he's making a good IC champ. But it's about time, finally, that some of these indie guys give Miz a little bit more respect and a little bit more, you know, just more respect, because he has really worked against more odds and difficulty than just about any wrestler I know of off the top of my head. Of just, you know, not anybody wanting him to be there, you know, the prejudice against him from where he came from and how he entered the business. And he has overcome all of that and has continued to be a success in this business. And I think I have all respect in the world for him.
Yeah, and, I do. Sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say I do too. Like, sometime in the last 3 or 4 years, I've become a really big fan of The Miz. Like, he is a veteran now, right? And, like, he's been there a decade or more, whatever it is. Like, it's time to stop thinking of him as, like, this guy who's only there because he, you know, said he wanted to be a wrestler on a reality TV show, right? Like, he's consistent. He is dependable. Like, okay, he's not the best in the ring, but he is incredibly entertaining. This whole A-list persona thing that he got when he came back with that character. I mean, I've been a huge fan. I mean, right? And he is surprisingly good with other people, right? Like, you can give him Sandow and you can make a real program out of it, and like, he's able to channel, because I think fans genuinely dislike The Miz, right? Like, it's not just people buying into the story. I think there is a lot of anger for him, and he's able to take that and, you know, I mean, there's no reason Sandow shouldn't have got a push after that, because Miz set him up beautifully, you know, to launch him into something else. And I think he's incredibly valuable. And I think, you know, when I was like, I was like, listening to that rant, and just, I couldn't believe like the smile on my face and just how much I was nodding with him. And, you know, to hear him be that kind of, you know, veteran voice in the locker room, right? I mean, there's all the stories about, you know, Jericho going after Brock after SummerSlam, right? Thinking that Brock had crossed the line. And then, you know, a couple nights later to see The Miz also kind of stepping into this veteran role. Yeah. I thought was really telling. And I've really become a big fan of him over the last couple of years.
Well, JR has said many times, and it's a very old school thing, that a you know, what helps some heels is the fact that they do have an unlikable quality that they can build upon. Certainly, Miz has had that. I mean, within the with the boys and the you know and the fans and the internet wrestling community and all of them, and he infuses that as fuel. You know, a couple examples JR's always used is Paul Heyman and Jim Cornette, who just have, you know, back in the day, just had that ability that they that just naturally people didn't like them. So they could build upon that. This whole thing that happened with Daniel, I think, is a work shoot. Convinced of that now because I started thinking about how at the draft it started because, you know, he reluctantly, you know, he really drafted the IC title, not Miz, and he pretty much said so. And that's starting this, whatever is going to go, where it was headed, whatever. But the Miz was genuinely angry. He used his real anger and delivered a great freaking promo because he does feel disrespected by some of these guys and it's wrong. So.
And it's kind of like his finest hour, right? I mean, like, it's kind of like he's finally, like, had something that he can put the flag down, and that's the moment people are going to remember him, right? Because he's going in the Hall of Fame someday, and that's going to be one of the clips that they show because it's, you know, it really was a defining moment, and he was genuinely angry. And if, you know, one of you posted the clip from Taz's podcast and,
yes,
you know, saying it was, yeah, thanks for that, because, you know, that whole idea that it was, you know, it's a work, but that they were giving him a little bit more freedom to kind of rant on his own. I mean, it was
which
brilliantly
is the whole point of
angry.
Network. And, right. And the network's getting better and better about using these shows to allow these guys just to be themselves rather than the scripted stuff that we see on Raw or SmackDown, so on and so forth. And it's been even a lot better, you know, because we're getting these, you know, Cesaro's, you know, straight up reaction to being drafted on SmackDown. I mean, Raw, he didn't like it, and so on and so forth. Even KO and his little exchange with Enzo in the panel. But,
Dean calling out Brock for being lazy on Stone Cold show. Like, yes. They are, it seems like we're in a time now where the wrestlers are really using the live opportunities that they have to really just vent.
That all comes from the CM Punk, pat bomb, which, you know, he even, you know, when he was, went on the media skirt, you know, the tour after that, he mentioned, you know, because everybody always brings up the Attitude Era, and he says, well, this is the Reality Era. Maybe this is lead to then. I think that's where this is. It took a little longer than it should have, but I think that's where we've ended up. And, Mark, I got to say, it's just so ironic that we're talking about this subject and talking about The Miz, and you actually kind of voice vocally, and the fact that you use Ride a lot remind me of Daniel Bryan. Okay, Mike Gordon.
What do we...
Remember,
whatever
it's your
you
turn.
Talk about.
Pick up a subject.
My turn again?
Yes. Oh, you already had. That's right. Mark.
I did.
I was going to skip Mark. Mark.
Well, I think we've covered most of the things from SummerSlam.
I've got one.
Okay, go ahead.
Please.
I'm just going to throw
it
out. What was I watching when Pupper's Chicken come across my TV?
Oh my God.
And we had The Miz dressed in a chicken suit. And even worse, which took me a little bit, we had Dolph Ziggler, who was competing for the championship, dressed up like Colonel Sanders. Yeah. And then they have a match.
They actually sent out a press release about that the next day. Like, I think that might be some sort of, It's like an integrated marketing thing they're doing with KFC, and I don't think that's the end of it, sadly.
Oh my God!
I mean, it was funny.
I have to tell you, like, I was exhausted Sunday night. I fell asleep somewhere during Randy's walk to the ring, which, you know, granted, took about 20 minutes anyways. And then I woke up during the replay
in the middle
of that chicken thing. And I remember I fell asleep in the chair and I woke up and I see Dolph as Colonel Sanders fighting The Miz in a chicken suit. And I didn't know if I was like, this can't be actually on the program. Like, I should probably like go to bed. And then they, it was like, it felt vaguely like Family Guy-esque how Peter and the chicken, like, and I was like, well, maybe I've stumbled onto an episode of the Family Guy. And then I was like, maybe I have food poisoning. And it was just the most bizarre thing.
They could go somewhere with this, you know, think about it, like a belt, like, you know, that looks like the bucket.
Oh, no. Yeah. I, you know, I have this
odd... I want to get to the belts later, but...
I have this odd fascination of how awesome would it have been to have been there when they recorded that.
Was that a house show, wasn't it?
I think, I mean, I would guess, or before one of the live shows.
I think that's what they said.
And, but the way they piped in Cheers. Oh gosh, it was so bad. It's like I haven't heard Cheers piped in that bad since Roman Reigns.
Oh, all right. I've waited no longer. I want to know why Richard Yule is the only person on the planet that doesn't like AJ versus John Cena's match.
But my big problem is I hate the big bumps and the kickouts, and move that really did it for me, that it was an amazing move, and it just gets shoved to the side, was where Styles had Cena in the torture rack, and then he put it into a powerbomb. I mean, that was amazing, and Cena just kicks out. Like, I feel like Stone Cold and like some of the other guys where it's like, you know, those big moves where they treat like DDTs like nothing, you know, and it was just frustrating. I mean, I get it. I mean, I love Styles and Cena, and I mean, it's not like my favorite match. I mean, I'm a huge Finn Balor fan, so I just like that match better. But
right,
but
and that's good match.
And Finn Balor, see,
and this is the reason why. I mean, I think probably pretty equal. I do believe that the AJ and Cena match was a bit better. But, there's, you know, when you got a hot crowd, it makes it really different.
Oh,
it,
sure.
It really does. You know, and instead, and that's a whole other subject we could maybe talk about, is that instead on the Finn Balor and Rollins match, we get a bunch of people freaking crapping on the belt and making it, you know, the fact that they didn't like the belt the important thing of the match.
Yeah.
And that kind of takes you out of it, too. So,
well, that's what I'm talking about, is the crowd, right? Like, I mean, I've had it with them ever doing shows in Brooklyn. Like, it's to the point where, like, that crowd is so interested in themselves more than anything else that it's just, you know, it's almost now like how can they, you know, sidetrack the show somehow? And it just it makes it kind of obnoxious to listen to.
That, you know, how can we make ourselves a part of the show other than totally supporting the show? But, and that's the difference, you know, because that, even with that type of crowd, they were totally and just completely enraptured into the Cena and AJ story.
Yep.
I get what your complaints are there, Richard. I was very curious as what they may have been.
Those are my big ones.
I get that. And that has been the issue, and I know a lot of the veterans have talked about it, and a lot of veteran fans have talked about it. Of course, you know, cultivated the Undertaker and Shawn matches. That's where it really, I think, took off and became a thing, and then it's continued on from there to be a thing.
And I love that match. Like, I love those matches, and I think it just because we've seen it so much here recently.
Well, it's
like
a saturation or whatever, but I it depends to me. In this match, I didn't mind it as much. I didn't even think about it until you brought it up, really. And I don't mind it as much because of the epic story that was being told of these two epic warriors, you know, the face of the place for, you know, 12 years now. And, you know, AJ, the, you know, considered by many to be the best wrestler in the world and certainly, you know, the hottest agent for years that never came here, you know. It's kind of like the Sting and Hogan of our day in an analogy way. I mean, not quite that, but, you know.
Much better wrestling.
Yeah, much better wrestling. But, I mean, as far as the, of what they represent, you know. And so that story, that epic struggle needs to be sort of being over the top and so on and so forth. Whereas I may complain a little bit more about, you know, the Young Bucks, you know, super kicking everybody and nobody selling it. So
yeah, that's a good comparison. The reason I didn't have a problem with that in this is because it wasn't that that the big moves were not being sold. They would kick out, but then they would still both be down, you know, recovering for a while. And then they'd get back up, and, you know, both of them were kicking out of big moves, but it wasn't like they were kicking out and jumping up and keep, you know, kept going.
And that's a very good point, particularly because the selling's what makes it work, and that's where I give as much as I like the Sasha and AJ Charlotte match, and give both girls, and particularly Sasha, credit for pulling out of the big botch, you know, and the injury, and so on and so forth, and making it work and keeping it alive and building the match back up. And they could have easily let that match die, and it could have been a total mess, but they pulled it off. The demerit goes to Charlotte not selling at the end. Or was it Sasha not selling at the end?
I can't remember.
Oh, Charlotte. Yeah, Charlotte, because she rolled over and she used it, but she had been in the move and she didn't sell it. But you know, she's still young, but she's Ric Flair's daughter and she knows better. So she should know better.
It did get to a point where, I mean, because after the Cena Styles match, then you have the two belt matches. And I remember particularly thinking and saying out loud to the guys that I was watching it with, during the Ziggler match, that at one point Ziggler did a wonderful like zigzag on him, and it just was a beautiful, one of the most beautiful ones I've seen him do, and Dean just kind of just like it barely got to a two count, and he just came out of it, and I was like, that's his finishing move. I was like, I guess finishing moves aren't really finishing tonight. They just didn't seem like any time that I don't know if any of the matches ended with actual finishing moves.
Of course, you mentioned that in that match, and it makes me think because, you know, I was watching it with my longtime buddy Ray Garner, who actually has been on the podcast and in the old incarnation. And he was mentioning during that, and says, you know, Ziggler might be the only guy I know of that's got as many finishers as Booker T. So.
and they had an uphill battle with that one. I felt kind of bad for them because I don't think anybody watching that match thought that Ziggler had a chance at all. And they really didn't even convince us at any point that he had a chance. And I don't think Dean helped that at all. I mean, as much as I like Dean, I don't think he sold that as well.
I think just the build was just so weird. You know, it was just like, Dean had to fight somebody, right? And so they had to fight, like, Ziggler's a good, you know, he's going to put on a good match, but it just, I mean, there was just no investment in that match at all. And also, like, this is supposed to be, like, the belt, right? And, like, again, placement. Where does it come in the show? It just felt like that whole match just felt like an afterthought to me. And
I think he was a placeholder because it was obvious from the moment that AJ was drafted over there that he was going to be going for that title. And he had to finish it with Cena first. So they had to have him wrestle somebody. I'm glad that Ziggler got another shot at the top, you know, and whatever. But I hope maybe that he doesn't, you know, fall all the way back down again because there's not as much competition and they can keep him, you know, relevant and so on and so forth. But
Nothing for him, though, really. It didn't help him at all.
No.
I mean, at the very least, he should have had, like, a heel turn come out of it or something that he could. I mean, I think he's better as a heel anyways. And I honestly think that would have been a great opportunity.
Talk about The Miz. When I lost interest with Miz is when he had his face turned.
Yeah.
And he became completely watered down and just nothing. And I was a much bigger fan of Dolph like that. Still am. I cannot deny his talent. I love watching him wrestle. But I'm just not interested in his character anymore. He needs to go back to being a heel. Hell, he knew that's what he loved to do. I mean, his freaking Twitter handle is still heel. You
know? Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, let the man, you know, go and do what he can do best, I think. You know? So who's next? Who wants to talk next? Who's got something else?
I'll go. I hate the belt situation. I hate it, and I don't mean that. I don't mean that the universal belt is ugly, which it is. But you know, fine. I hate, right? Like, it's the perfect opportunity. You know, you have like the U.S. belt and the Intercontinental belt, which always feel like afterthoughts, right? Like the whole point of the Intercontinental. If you hold the Intercontinental belt, like your job is to get everybody else over as long as you have the belt, right? You go on Raw and you lose constantly, and then somehow keep the belt at the pay per view. But I mean, I hate. This would have been the perfect opportunity to like raise the status of the Intercontinental belt and the U.S. belt in the eyes of the fans. And now we've got, you know, these two. I mean, I've just moved, so I didn't watch SmackDown last night, but apparently there's a new women's belt, there's a new tag team belt, and I'm like, we're right back to like where we were, you know, a few years ago, which is like there's so many belts, they're meaningless. Like, and I just wish they would find another way to do it. Like, if they had made, you know, the Raw belt, the Intercontinental belt, and left the World Heavyweight belt over on SmackDown, like, that would have been perfect to me. Like, you know,
well, that's certainly what my friend Ray was calling for. He hates the whole thing. He doesn't like the brand split either, and he hates the new Universal title. He's a big lover of the IC title. I am too. But I told him, since I wouldn't. But because I'm more traditionalist than he is on this particular issue, because I just think the IC title needs to be what it always has been. I don't want it to be the top belt. I want it to be that great secondary mid-card title that a workhorse has, and so on and so forth. Now, this is all a perception issue, and I get that. And I understand that everything you said is true to a large degree. Here's the problem. I'm a believer, and I was back when they did it before, and then they eventually screwed it up. To keep it from screwing up again, they got to do this. They have to be separate brands. They cannot be connected other than, of course, obviously, the big shows or whatever, WrestleMania. So that means that you got to have the other belts, because there's no – I mean, it doesn't make any sense to have women or tag teams on that other brand if they're not vying for something. And so I get that, but at the same token, it's a necessary evil, because, you know, Becky Lynch needs to have a title. You know, the American Alpha need a title. You know, so
that's, I absolutely agree, and I still don't like it. You know, like, I mean, I get why they did it. I wish, like, I don't know. I mean, I wish they had a better way of doing it. I mean, I guess I get hung up on names too. Like, I mean, Universal just sounds so dumb. Like, I mean, I hate, like, eventually it won't matter. You'll get used to it.
And, well, as a fan of
what it is,
as a fan of the Universal Monsters and the OUWF, I just completely. But nevertheless, now see, here's the deal. Again, and this is important too. And if they don't do this, then it's not going to matter anyway. I said, but they need, the whole idea that these are two separate brands. They have to, you know, it's like kayfabe. This is no different than any other aspect of kayfabe. If they do it right and they build these brands up and they keep them separate and they get everybody invested in it, it's going to be the illusion, whether it's like WCW versus, you know, WWE or NWA versus WWE, even though we know for a fact that it's all under the same umbrella corporately. But they have done this because NXT has its own identity. It's completely separate from, you know, the other two. And people are invested in it far more than they are the main show in some cases. And others who don't give a damn about it. So they can do it. It can be done. And if they do, then it's not going to matter, you know, after a while, you know, that they have all these titles, because the only titles going to be important to SmackDown are those, and the only ones important to Raw will be those.
Well, they have a long way to go to differentiate themselves, because right now the product looks on both look very similar. So when I heard about the brand split, I was excited, because I thought particularly SmackDown would try to be a little bit more daring take more risks. And instead, it seems like that's the one that's the safe one. That seems like that's the one where it feels like it's WWE all over. And I really didn't expect that out of the brand split.
Well, I think they're probably like afraid, right? Because is SmackDown ever not going to be thought of as like the B show, like in this current incarnation? I mean, that's what they got to get to, right? Is they want to get to it.
This that Dev would be the challenge, I would think.
Right.
You know, not only of the SmackDown crew, but of, you know, the overall head, like Vince and the board, that we can't allow this to happen. And certainly I know the USA would like them both to be equal. So you have to go in with that mindset. You have to say, we're going to change people's minds about this. We know we got an uphill battle to go, but we have to convince these people that this show is as important. And differentiating it is a very big point. And it should have been way different from the very beginning. It should have been the more of the wrestling show. It should have had the cruiserweights, so on and so forth. But, you know, whether they tinker with it here and there, but they still need to somehow separate the thing and not just be Raw and Raw Light. One way that Raw should do it, I think, and we've kind of had it just by accident, but just by virtue of the people that they have brought over to Raw, there's a lot of international flavor there. There's a lot of international top guys over there, from Finn to, you know, to Jericho to KO, Alberto until recently, Sheamus, so on and so forth. There's a lot of international wrestlers, Cesaro, that are over there. They could really accentuate that, and, you know, and that kind of adds to the whole universal title, you know, being over the world, or possibly, and the fact that it is truly the World Cup of wrestling over here, where it's all these different people from all different countries. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think any way they can differentiate the shows is something they need to look into, right? Like, I want them to have a different look and a different feel to them. Otherwise, it's just show A and show B, right? And then it's going to be hard for the fans to think of them as different things. If they had a different look, a different feel to it, if they accentuated, like you said, the international aspect of one of the shows, and I wonder if that was like intentional, given that, you know, Raw has bigger syndication worldwide than SmackDown, I think. Like, I wonder if that's a play to the international audience. It would make sense to make them feel different. Right now, they don't feel like different shows to me. And I think that's a
which
problem.
Go ahead.
I think that's a problem, right? I think that you want them to have kind of distinct identities, and I don't know if they can have that in their current incarnation. I mean, I think more changes need to be made. And I don't know if they, you know, the WWE right now doesn't strike me as a company that's interested in taking big risks. And I would have liked to have seen them take a bigger risk with SmackDown.
Absolutely. Especially since that's what they were touting. I mean, Shane kept coming saying that we're going to change this. We're going to change camera angles. We're going to change, you know, I mean, heck, it was Raw that changed the placement of where the announcements were. Announcers were. It wasn't SmackDown, you know. SmackDown changed its logo, and that's about it. Like, I mean, most of the career wrestlers that are in the WWE are on SmackDown. And pardon me, but SmackDown, it feels like Divas all over again. It doesn't feel, I'm not feeling the women's revolution over on SmackDown right now. I just think it just feels not as different as they touted it to be. And I really think, you know, I mean, it's been said so many times that one of the biggest mistakes that TNA ever made was they tried to be the WWE. Well, SmackDown needs to take a page from that and try to be not WWE, which is weird because they are so WWE right now.
Yes, Jonathan, you were about to say something?
Well, they mentioned the first Chinese wrestler was signed. Which show? Does anybody remember which show he's going to be on?
Oh, I think he's going to be on the Ben. I just read a thing about it. I think it's going to be a Raw show.
Probably the Cruiserweights, I would imagine. He's a little guy. He's even little for a Cruiserweight.
Which WWE's Facebook, of course, Cena did this when they first announced him. Who knew Cena knew Chinese as much as he did? Man,
amazing.
It's like perfect.
I remember,
I'll tell you, you know, I was resistant for a long while, but I give up. I cede. You're great, John Cena. You're just playing great.
Yeah, okay? You really are.
I give up. You're just great. You know,
he was on a podcast or something probably more than a year ago, and he mentioned that he was learning Mandarin and stuff. And I think he just made it sound like he was just doing it to do it, but obviously he probably knew that this was happening.
Had a reason, right. Yeah. So, I mean, there you go. But the one thing I will say, I mean, and trust me, I agree with everything that's been said here more or less. But I do want to caution us to not to be turned into old grumpy men totally about it, because we have had a lot of progress. We had Finn Balor win the first, you know, major title of the new Raw era. That would have not happened even a year ago. You know, it would not have happened. And
well, yeah. I meant to mention that earlier. There's definitely been a change of mentality, I guess you'd say, in WWE. I think part of that is from signing all these indie guys and seeing their popularity first in NXT and then on the main roster.
Yeah, but it goes also back to Punk. It goes to Daniel. But yes.
Was Triple H, right? I mean, like
the that's who's getting the credit for it. But I don't, you know, I would assume it's, you know, it's definitely not. It's not Vince McMahon, because they used to have so much control over who their talent could talk to. And, like, for instance, when I've interviewed WWE people for bigger publications, the publicist is either always right there with us, or if it's on the phone, the guy stays on the phone and sometimes tries to kind of dictate what kind of questions are asked and things like that. And it seems like they're definitely pulling back, you know, letting them a little loose. You know, they're probably still doing that. They're probably still overseeing stuff, but they're just letting a little bit more get through. And that also carries over to things like what you just said. Finn Balor, you know, I don't think anybody expected him to even be in that match, let alone win it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Especially when it came down to him and Roman Reigns, I think everybody was like, "Well, here we go again.
Yeah. certainly. And when he went over, it was a huge moment. And then, you know, okay, good. He's going to go against Rollins, and Rollins is going to win, and it's going to give Finn this good boost. And then he won. So it was obvious now that they certainly were riding with this guy to at least, you know, see if he could be the guy. And that would have been great. And unfortunately that didn't happen now, but yeah, we've seen advancement in the women. I mean, look at the kind of women wrestlers we've got now, you know, it's not perfect, but it's certainly a far cry from where it was, you know, the tag team, we actually have a tag team division. We, you know, and our tag team champions are certainly one of the most over, you know, people on the card. And you've got another tag team in Enzo and Cass who are just as over. So and over, you know. So I mean, it's there's a lot there. There's a lot more way to go, but there's a lot there. Now, let me go the other direction. Since Finn Balor, who. There's no question, folks. I'm here to tell you, I might as well have been a fly on the wall. Vince McMahon had to be convinced about all of that. He had these guys in his ear. He had Triple H in his ear, and he was convinced to ride with Finn Balor. It was not his decision. It was not anything that he believed in. Now that situation has evaporated. So now we're going to go to whatever Vince wanted. And it's not Roman, because he soured on Roman. It's a little, at least to some degree. He's obviously not going to bury him or whatever, and that's the reason why he's still being booked the way he is. But there is a guy that's been rumored that he is very high on. He's big. Yes. Big Cass is going to be your new Universal Champion. Bank it. Book it.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Yeah, I would be highly shocked if that was not the case. Because there's no reason for Big Cass to be in this tournament.
Yeah, as soon as they even had him involved in it, I knew that it was a done deal.
There's no reason. There's no reason to break them up unless you're going to, well, maybe not even break them up, but separate them.
If they're smart, they won't break them up and let Enzo be his partner and his little buddy, and he's the basic mouthpiece and basically essentially a manager. And I think it could actually get over. They like him. And it will scratch that itch that Vince has always had, you know, about, you know, big guys.
If Enzo stayed with him, I would like that. If he acted like a manager I would be okay with Big Cass winning the belt. Yeah.
Cass,
I think Big Cass will become incredibly boring without Enzo, I think.
Yeah, he's got to have Enzo. He's got to have Enzo. For now. Now, he may come into his own and he may get much better, and he's not horrible.
He has improved a lot.
He gets better every week as far as talking and stuff.
Yeah, so absolutely. It wouldn't be forever, but right now he still needs Enzo. You
know? He is really good, though. I mean, it's very, especially this early in the game, from a big guy like that, I'm very surprised that he is as ready as he is.
Yeah, he is. I mean, I'm very impressed with him, and that's the reason why I'm not totally against this. I mean, I'm not saying this is a negative thing. Vince likes him. The rest of and certainly Triple H likes him. So that's the reason why no one's going to talk him out of it. I just hope that they stay in his ear and say, okay, I know you're probably annoyed by the little guy, but he's got to be there. Keep the little guy. But here's the deal. This is a perfect opportunity. We all can pick who we would like, not necessarily who we think. You can do both. You can think who it is that they're going to actually crown, but more importantly, who do you want them to crown out of this bunch? And I'll start off, and I'm going to say Kevin Owens. I think it's going to be a big cast, but, Lors, I would want Kevin Owens.
Who all do we have?
We have we have Roman Reigns, we have Seth Rollins, we have Kevin Owens, and we have Big Cass.
Yeah, I think Big Cass is the one that I don't know. I mean, out of that selection, I kind of think Big Cass in a way. I mean, Kevin Owens I love, but I just don't think they'll give it to him. But if
I didn't say they would. I'm just saying I want.
Who do you want?
I'm with you. I want Kevin to win it because I think he could carry it as a heel for a long time.
Actually,
as long as they need it, really.
I think you're right, Mike. But and I think that's how it starts. But I see Stone Cold in KO.
Yeah, me too.
The fans pop for him big. That once he turns and starts doing his thing against faces, it's just going to go to the moon. It really is. Go ahead, Jonathan.
I don't know that I want any of them, honestly, but I guess.
Well, then tell us who you would like if it's not those four.
No, I mean, I'll stick to the four that it's come down to,
okay.
I guess. I mean, Seth Rollins was a great champion.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
So I think I'd like to see him again, but a lot of people probably don't want to see that because of the, you know, all the controversy with the injuries and whatnot.
Actually, I think most people do want to see it, but they want to see him as a face.
I don't see him as a face at all.
I don't either, but there's people wanting to be familiar. There's, I want to say, not everybody, obviously, but there's a large contingent out there, not only verbally in the audience, but on the internet and so on and so forth, they just want him to be a face, and they wanted to come back as a face. I think he's one of the best heels. He's one of the best heels going today, and I think it would be a waste of his talent, personally. But I'm not the one making those decisions. Mike, did you already? Yeah, you did. You said KO. Mark.
Yeah, of those four, Owens. But and I totally agree with you about the Owens and the Stone Cold thing. I mean, I think Owens has a chance to be kind of, a massive superstar, right? That it just goes and goes and goes. But like when I look at Owens, I see Ziggler in a way, in the sense that like Kevin Owens doesn't need a belt to be entertaining.
That's
right?
True.
Like he doesn't need it. Kevin Owens is going to give you 20 minutes of great TV every Monday night, as long as he's in the company. He doesn't need the belt. And so I worry that guys like that, if Vince or whoever decides that like they don't need the belt to be good, then they're not going to get the belt to be good. That they're going to keep it away from him because they can use the belt to help somebody else get over. That is a fear that I have with Owens, but whatever Kevin Owens wants to do, I'm on board. I mean, I think the guy's a riot. He's good in the ring. He's good out of the ring. And yeah, you know, all aboard.
Well, the only thing I'll disagree with you about that, Mark, is slightly. I mean, 99% of it I agree with. But I do like the whole prize fighter aspect of his character.
Yeah.
So that does require a title for him to be that. But other than that, he doesn't really need it. But it's just I like that aspect of his character. So, Jonathan Williams, why do you hate Kevin Owens?
I didn't say I hate him.
It's a joke.
I actually
and the feud starts.
I was a fan of him as Kevin Steen, and he was always a heel and was a great heel, and I think he's a great heel. But much like what you were saying about Seth Rollins, I think he would be a better face than Seth Rollins would be.
Yes.
And I do think I would like to see him as the champion someday. I, for some reason, just don't want that to be now. I'm not sure why that is.
I was just teasing with you. But actually, you make a good point, though, because this is something else that's happening. We're getting a little more flavors with some of these indie guys and these other people coming up and so on and so forth. You know, for a long time, it seemed to me that there was a lot of cookie-cutter faces, a lot of cookie-cutter. All the heels were cowardly heels. All of the faces were, you know, John Cena, big smiley, you know, guys, and so forth. We're getting a little more flavor among, you know, the different kinds of guys. And Kevin Owens and Rollins are and Jericho are two of the best heels going right now, or could be completely – it couldn't be more different. All three of them are completely different in the way that their character is done and the way that they present themselves and so on and so forth. You know, and Kevin, the reason why he is the one that I think could best transition to being a face is that his motivations actually are good motivations. It's just how he goes about it or the choices he makes for those motivations. Rollins just a douche. You know, he's just a straight-up douche. You know, and Jericho is just like this wonderful, deluded guy who thinks he's as big as he used to be and this big freaking to-do, and he's not, and he can't seem to be able to deal with that fact. And so it's just entertaining as hell to watch, and of course all three of them are great in the ring. So
it's so nice to love Jericho again. Like,
yeah,
like
Jericho.
This is my favorite like incarnation of Jericho the Jerk. Like when he came back.
Yeah.
That one of the infinite times where he's come back and he just like refused to talk, right? Like I'm just like yes, like like, you know, and that I mean my favorite Jericho moment of all time, right? Back to the WCW days, the Dean Malenko, right? Like Malenko was like the man of 1,000 holds and or 1,000 moves or whatever it was, and then Jericho was like, I'm the man of 1,001 moves, and he's like, I'm gonna read them to you, and it was like every four of them was like arm bar or something. Like I mean, that's just it. And if you've ever heard like the story that he tells of like when they went to commercial break and he just like got that crowd like so riled up during the commercial break, and then they come back and he's like, you know, move 803. Armbar or whatever it was. Like, I mean, that's the Jericho that I want.
Absolutely agree. You know, and it worked in the Attitude Era for him to be a face, because your faces could be jerks. Let's face it, The Rock's a jerk. You know, The Rock was a jerk. You know, and that was part of his appeal, and that's why we liked him. Even Stone Cold, he was a total. He was a horrible person. He would just beat up everybody, but we liked it. And Jericho, you know, saying horrible things to Stephanie was very crowd pleasing.
Yeah.
So, but he was still, it's no different. He's a horrible person. And then we got now this total, you know, guy he is now, who even, you know, and just the sweet little bits like that fans like us can pick up on that maybe nobody else knows. But when there's been two or three different occasions where I said, Stephanie's a great person. I've always loved Stephanie. Yeah. Well, the only Jericho, just, I mean, he just throws it in there because he knows, you know, it's a total contradiction, you know.
Well, he's one of the few guys that can make, like this whole bit he has with, like, not calling Tom Phillips by his real name, you know, but giving a different name. Like that shouldn't necessarily work, and I'm rolling on the floor. Oh, it's just,
like, see that something has lit his fire. Because, you know, the last couple of, you know, times he's come through, he hasn't really, you know, he's just done what he needed to do and whatever. But something's caught him on fire again. I think he's been allowed to go back to being heel and working with KO and working with some of these guys, so on and so forth. But, I mean, you got that. Like you said, there's the it, you know. To drink it all in. He's got all new catchphrases again, you know, that everybody are loving or hating. And it's just, a beautiful thing. I'm really enjoying his work. And well, him and KO have a natural chemistry.
Yeah, now that you're mentioning all that, I think that's why I don't think right now is when I want to see KO as the champion, because I want to see the two of them continue their thing.
I completely agree.
And I guess
agree
they
with
could.
But... I agree with that, yes. So I changed my mind. You changed my mind again, Jonathan.
That needs to be my new nickname.
Let me ask a question. Does it feel like to you guys that the champions are on the wrong show, right? Because I have this feeling that, like, you know, we're supposed to like Shane and Daniel, and we're supposed to like Dean as the champion, right? So there's not that natural tension between the people who control the show and, you know, like the top dog on the show. And then over on Raw, right, as long as Stephanie's there, you know, she's the main force. And so should there be, like, you know, like if Dean had been on Raw, like Dean and Stephanie would be a great dynamic. And if Seth was over on SmackDown, Seth and Daniel would be a great – I mean, I think Daniel's a terrible actor as much as I love the guy. But Seth and Shane would be – there would be great chemistry there. So it feels like the champions are on the wrong show to me.
Yeah, you want the conflict, and I think you're exactly right. It would have been better for that to be a swap deal with the – yeah, that makes sense. So – let's go one more time around the table. Anybody has any errant thoughts or anything else they want to add? You don't have to, but if you got something, go ahead. We'll start with, Mark. We'll start with you.
Is 4-hour pay-per-views going to be the new thing? Right?
I think that's just the biggest ones.
I mean, I wonder if I hope when we go back to these kind of brand-specific pay-per-views that they're a little bit more self-contained, because I think sometimes you can do more with less, right? I think,
and I do hope that they at least look at it and see how they need to fix it, because I think that's the other problem. It's not just the, you know, the brand split thing, because let's see, we're bracketed by the last biggest show was WrestleMania, which was really long, and then this one, SummerSlam, was really long. Actually, all the ones in the middle have been pretty darn good. So there you go, yeah. Mike.
I think we just about covered everything. It's just, you know, I just hope that, well, now that, you know, each brand will have their own pay-per-views for a while, I think there's still going to be a lot of, I mean, I think it's still going to be a painful process for us, because I think they're going to still have a lot of growing pains as they try to figure out how to handle that. But, you know, hopefully by Survivor Series, they'll get their act together.
Jonathan.
Well, I didn't comment on what was said earlier about the new titles and whatnot, because I've pretty much said the same things over the past few shows when we've talked about all this. Right. I hate the fact that there are all these titles now, and I hate even more that they all look the same. But one thing that really irritated me about it even more was on Talking Smack two or three weeks ago, Daniel Bryan was making fun of Raw for just creating this title, and now his show just created two titles.
Yep.
So it's just very contradictory, and that's all. Only other thing I had to say about things that we discussed tonight.
One quick thing I'll say about the title situation, and again, it goes back to the Miz and Daniel thing, but no one cannot criticize Miz or doubt that Miz is trying his damnedest to raise the value of that IC title. And he may have a lot of stuff working against him, but it ain't anything he's doing that's keeping it back. So
it's getting, you could say the same thing for Rusev and the U.S. title,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely.
I will say I do wish that they had kept, you know, when Cena had that U.S. Open tournament every week, I wish they would make that a feature of the belt. Like, I wish, like, maybe not every
title.
Single week. Yeah, but maybe not every single week, but maybe every other week. Like, yeah. make him defend that title, because then you build up the, you know, the way people look at it, and I think it helps the Rusev character. I mean, I love Rusev. I think he's hilarious online, and I wish they would let him kind of loose more on the show.
Another flavor, because we haven't had a heel like him in a long time. I mean, he's a big brute, but he's got a great look. And he's got a really wily sense of humor that he lets loose every once in a while, like when he took the monitor with him, you know. So yeah. He's like that, you know. Richard.
I just think that Finn Balor is a complete badass because he popped in his shoulder and continued to wrestle.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, because so that happened.
Soon,
yeah, it's going to be a few months, but I'm hoping for a Royal Rumble return. He wins, and we have Rollins versus Finn at WrestleMania.
For me.
That's what I really hope happens. But.
Yeah.
At least we did see.
I don't think that any of this is going to count against Finn. I think this is a postponed thing and not a canceled thing. So yeah. Finn will come back, and he'll go back to the top. I know they see money in him. I see money in him. I still, to this day, and I know everybody's got their own opinions and this, that, and the other, but people who are not big on him, I don't get it. I mean, he's like the combination of The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels and Jeff Hardy. I mean, he may be little, but he's got a uniqueness to him like nobody else. You know, he's going to be money. He's going to be money. Yeah. So.
And at least we did see a little Bullet Club interaction with him at SummerSlam.
Yes.
Oh, yes. that was cool. Nice.
It was great. Anyway, so anybody got anything that they want to push or talk about, promo, anything they got going on that want people to know? I know, obviously, Jonathan Williams always with the excellent WrestlingWithPopCulture.com, which he soon will be reviewing my novel, Snake Hand, Sidewinder's Book 1, co-wrote with Chuck Dixon, and we'll be doing an interview with him. So, and I got my comps today. That was great.
Very nice.
Cool.
Awesome.
Anybody else got anything? All right. Then we're done. And, guys, we thank you for coming and talking to us. It was a great conversation, as always. Thank you, Mark, for your first time. You handled yourself very well. And Mike Gordon, he's the old vet, so he's always good.
And it's always a pleasure to be on here, though.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And, and Jonathan and Richard is always my stalwart companion. So, anyway, thank you all, everybody, for listening. Give us some feedback. Let us know. Richard, run down the information they need to know.
Well, you can find us on Facebook. That's our group that has always been there, at least for the past 3 years. We got, a good group of guys. We got hashtag WCW, hashtag... Turnbuckle Thursday, hashtag SNME. So lots of good things. It's Facebook /groups/ ESO Pro if you'd like to find it. And real quick, for those that keep up from last week, we all picked, me, Jonathan, and John picked the results for SummerSlam.
Who won?
So we had John. He got 5 matches right. And we had Jonathan. He had 3 matches right.
Ooh.
And I got 6. So.
Oh, the judge wins.
Now, really, the swing was I picked Finn and Ambrose, and you guys picked the others. So,
yeah.
So people keeping up, that's what that was.
Excellent. I forgot all about that. Thank you for remembering that, Richard.
No problem.
And
I would like to hear more about Mike's tiki thing at Dragon Con.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, please do.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, we got Dragon Con coming up, and very excited about that. I will be in the Artist Alley, my table is 115L. I'm actually going to be hosting a Tiki Pop Art panel on Sunday as well. And, of course, we'll be doing ESO things all weekend as well.
Awesome. Well, I guess that'll do us. Just want to say real quick, we've got some really interesting things that possibly coming in our future of the ESO Pro. Can't say anything about it yet, but definitely some interesting things shaking out there. So just always give us a listen and let us know what you think and give us some feedback, because if we're not doing it right or wrong, how are we supposed to? If you don't tell us we're doing it right or wrong, then how do we know? So good night, everybody.
The
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.